For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
Welcome, everyone. So, Guten Chodesh, we begin, this is the month of the 9 days that we begin, which the book of the 9 days is really Eicha. So we have a good head start, so to speak. There's an interesting idea I saw. This time of year is called the in between the Bein Hamitzarim, the in between the straits, or in between the once the siege started, and then the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash was on Tisha B'Av, and so we're in the in between time. So I saw that normally if a person wants to get an audience with the king, it's very difficult because you get in the palace and talk to the king, and you just can't do that. You have to have protection. You have to get. But when the king is traveling, you have a much better chance because he's on the road. So traditionally, Hashem's more intense presence, his Shechina, was in the Beis Hamikdash, and it began to move during this time, and until it kind of hovered over that area, and eventually it left its permanent like establishment and being there. But because he's on the move, it's actually easier to connect to Hashem this time of year. So spiritually, a person, and we mentioned that you can have a sad holiday or a happy holiday, and the good news is that sad holidays can be turned back into happy ones. And that's kind of the, as we said, the Mashiach is born on Tisha B'Av, which out of all days to be born, you would say. But we believe that that ultimately that Tisha B'Av was a day of mercy, that it was a day of. So we always have to keep that in mind, because otherwise it's very easy to get depressed. Nothing in Eicha is you know, it's bad news, but our understanding is that that's the human condition, is that people will make mistakes and they'll pick themselves up and they'll fix their mistakes. And that's what happened with Adam, and that's what's going to happen throughout history, is that, you know, we go through mistakes and we get rebuke, but it's a rebuke of love. And the month of Av, which we're starting, the name Av means father. And one of the ideas is that it's true that the Jewish people face many difficult wars and difficult things that happen, but it's coming from a love. It forges us into a people because of these difficulties. It's people who always have it easy, they don't, when things are, many of the great people that you meet became great because of the difficulties that they overcame. And that's true to some extent. If you ever meet people that really impress you, most of the time it's because of what they overcame to become who they are. It wasn't because they just inherited everything and they just stood there and they, you know, it was because they faced difficulties in their lives and they grew because of those difficulties. And Hashem's book also, it works that way. People that face different challenges and they overcome them and they do the best they can and they pick themselves up, that's how people become, that's the challenge of life. And so that's very much the Tisha B'Av challenge. Sometimes the challenge is that we get messages and we don't listen to the messages. And that seems to be what, you know, the prophets were sending messages and people weren't listening to them. So verse 10.
Which chapter?
Oh, chapter 2. Does that sound about right or something like that? Yeshua L'Oretz. Now, one of the things that we do on Tisha B'Av is we sit on the ground. Or we sit very close to the ground. It doesn't have to be actually on the ground, but usually within 3/5 of the ground. That's where the mourners, they sit next to the ground. There's a question why is that? Why would you sit next to the ground? So some people see it as having like 1 foot in the grave, you know, like you're one step, you know, to the ground. There's an idea that when tragedies happen, when the angel of death is like let loose, We're hoping that's the last tragedy. You know, every time an Israeli soldier gets killed, I always hope that's the last one. And you know, Nebuch, every day you look and there's another one. You know, that, but you always hope that it's the last one. But when Hashem is angry and when the angel of death, so to speak, is given power to make whatever tragedies there are, a person who's close to that situation always has to be worried that maybe Hashem is angry with him, and maybe the angel of death it struck somebody who a person knows, who's in the family, who's close by. And so a person, when he sits on the ground, he said, that's him saying that, I don't know that I'm any better than the person that died or the person that lost a child or the person that, but I'm aware, I'm looking at this tragedy trying to, as if I could be next. So I'm like 1 foot in the, I'm on the ground. Like, that's one idea, sitting to the ground. Some people would say it's also like being close to the, you know, the person that passed away. It's showing the person still feels connected. Different ideas there, why the, but that is the custom. One of the interesting things about Tisha B'Av, and you really do feel this, is that you get up in the middle of the Tisha B'Av day and you don't have to sit on the floor anymore. And morning also, with Shiva, you get up. There's a very clear idea that this is a temporary thing. There's a time to feel sad, a time to mourn, and then there's a time to get up. And a person needs to experience that, but first they have to properly. So, Yeshu La'aretz, a person should sit down on the ground. Yid Musa, and he says here, now, somehow people expect, I guess, older people, they face tragedies in life, and but they don't expect younger people. Younger people are always cheerful, always happy. And so it begins talking about the elders of Zion are sitting on the ground. I guess older people are more solemn and they're aware of things sooner. Younger people aren't affected as much. And then it says, Olu Afwa Roshim, let them put dirt or ashes on their forehead. We do this for a groom when he gets married. Before he gets married, they take a drop of ashes and they put it on his forehead, right where he puts his tefillin on. And then they wipe it off. Today they take a picture of it and they put it in the album, you know, they're putting the ashes on the forehead or the but that's a symbol of a person being aware of the loss, of the destruction. Chagru Sakim, a person should gird themselves with sackcloth. It means the person shouldn't be comfortable. When you wear sackcloth, you're itchy. You're constantly, it's one of the worst things, you know, to wear something that you itch. It's just like, you can't sit still. But the idea of being uncomfortable means that things got to change. Hashem wants something from us. He wants things to change. And if we don't change, we're being cruel, because then we're going to face the same Tisha B'Av next year. So we have to put on the sackcloth, meaning we have to realize that it's all about change. It's all about changing things. Harid el-Oret Roshan, put your heads down. Besulas Yushalayim. And then we mentioned the young woman of Yushalayim and should mourn. Verse 11. Kalo bedimos einai. Now, sometimes a person cries when they're sad, but when they've had a lot of tragedy, they feel like they can't cry anymore. There's like no more tears. The Holocaust survivors talk about that. Sometimes they cried, they weren't able to cry then, they cry later, but there's so many tears that come out. Chamo mei, and then their stomach is churning. When a person is upset, like their whole system, they don't feel well. It's like they hear bad news. It's like their stomach churns inside them. Nishmakot, like their liver falls out. It's just describing their kishkas. It hurts their kishkas. You know, it's their liver. Now, why is that? Al sheper basami, because my people. A person has to feel the loss of their people, the brokenness of their people. Besatif olavaya, and our future, the young children are out in the streets. They're not guarded. They're not protected. This almost describes them. Nobody to take care of them. Now we'll hear more about these children in verse 12. Umasam, these children go to their mothers, and they say, "Aye, dogan v'yayin, where's the wheat and the wine?" So it's very interesting. What are they asking for wine? They're asking for bread and water. So some people say that famine is much harder on people that were spoiled, that had good food, and then they have famine. They saw this in the Holocaust as well. The Jews from Poland were used to not having very much food. And so they lasted much longer in the concentration camps. But the Hungarian Jews that came in were relatively well-fed, and they passed away much quicker because they were used to having, you know, things good. And then all of a sudden it was taken away. And so these children, they go to their mothers. They don't just want bread and water. They remember the wine and the good stuff. They want, where's the pizza? Where's the wine? They ask their mothers. And it's a tragedy in that they... this is what it's come to. This atzum b'cholu b'rachovos ir, and they can be found in the street corners. And again, we shouldn't have many things to compare it to. But if you read about the Holocaust, like in the Warsaw Ghetto, they talked about the children on the street corners. That they, a lot of times their parents had been killed or taken to work, and they were starving, and there was no one to take care of them. These children, they go to their parents who died in plagues, who died of starvation, and there's nobody to care for them. What a tragedy, the little children, the hungry, the pure, innocent children, there's no food for them. 13. Ma idahuch, ma damaluch. Misery loves company, and they always tell people if they have a challenge, they should get a support network of people that have gone through similar things. Many times people think they're the only one that's experienced X, Y, Z, and then when they find out that there's a whole bunch of people that have gone through it and look how they've over... It's just much more helpful. When the Jewish people faced a destruction, there was no one to talk to. There was no support group. Who can I compare you to? Ma Adamalach, the daughter of Yerushalayim. Ma Ashvalach. Usually if a person looks around and they see, well, this happens to other people and they overcame it and it's normal, that's all expected. But over here, there was no comfort because there was no other nation that we could compare to. The Sulis Basio, the young woman of Zion, again, we talked about this metaphor of the young woman is the Yerushalayim is called like a young woman, like a young, the next part is very interesting. You'll hear this expression, ki gadol, the mourning is great, kiyam shivrech, your breaking is like the sea, mi yirpala, who will heal you? So the question is, what is this idea of being as great as the sea? Your ruin is as vast as the sea. So I saw one interpretation I thought was fascinating was when you have a shipwreck. You had this in sometimes in the during World War II, where sometimes the Japanese would bomb an aircraft carrier or something, and within 15 minutes the whole ship would go down, and there'd be nothing left. Sometimes it took longer, but in other words, when there's a destruction that's out in the sea, it happens, and it's like gone. There's like no memory of it. There's no The tragedy of the Jewish people, it's like a tragedy like the sea is broken in the sea. You don't see it anymore. It's gone. You could go today to Poland where 3 million Jews lived. They were the largest minority in Poland. They, more than the blacks are in the United States, the Jews were in Poland. There were a million Jews in Warsaw. And they lived there for 1,000 years, and you go there today and not a single Jew. You know, you won't find them. You might find a museum. Where'd they go? You know, it's like a just like in the sea where you had a ship that sank. They're just gone. They're not there anymore. That's one idea. I saw another idea that when a person like faces the sea, it's a constant. The waves keep on coming. They don't stop. I was in Florida. I saw the beach where the waves keep on coming. But if you ever see the waves, they're constant. So too, when the Jewish people faced tragedies or difficulties, it was like the sea. It just kept one wave after another. First came one wave, and then they thought they'd overcome. Then another wave, and then another wave, and then another wave. Ki gadol kiyam shivrech. Your brokenness was like that of the sea. There's an idea, by the way, we know that we'll be healed, that we'll overcome the break. But at the moment, who's going to heal you? How is it going to get better? That we don't see. How are we ever going to overcome? the Jews thought in the Holocaust that they'd never get over it. They thought that it was it. That was the end of the Jewish people. Nobody foresaw that today we don't even think about it like, of course we got up from the Holocaust. Of course, it doesn't happen like that. Other nations, when they face a loss, they give up. They just disappear. There's no strength to rebuild or to continue to keep on going. But the Jewish people, they faced a ruin like the sea. Verse 14. So what people need in a time of tragedy is they need people of vision. But unfortunately, we didn't have vision then. We didn't have prophecy. We didn't have leadership. Their prophets, instead of telling you like it is, they told you lies. They told you things that weren't true. It's one of the challenges of our time is that we don't see politicians that we can respect. In other words, we use that word politician, but if we change it to leader, right? These are people who are supposed to be leaders. They're supposed to be the best of our people that are there to help us. And then instead of helping us, they're full of lies. And they're only interested in their own selves. And isn't that awful when you have leaders that instead of telling you, trying to help you and be out there for your... I'm sure they're good leaders. I'm sure we're all waiting for them. Here, we'll vote for them if we figure out who they are, right? But there's a big tragedy with that when you don't have people who you can... who give you a false vision, who tell you, Nevi'echa, that your prophets, they tell you false, they tell you lies. They didn't tell people about their sins, about their mistakes. We need people to tell us about them, otherwise we can fix them. The hush is through a stake, because that would have saved them. But instead of telling us our problems, v'yekzulach maso shav maduchim, they told us false things and vain things. Don't worry, we'll overcome them. They instead of telling them, yes, there is a danger if you don't return to Hashem and you don't fix the problems in society, that maybe the Beis HaMikdash will be destroyed. They had prophets. We don't talk about it today, but they had plenty of false prophets. There is a challenge, which is that there's a lot of different, there's competition out there for ideas. And you'll hear some people will say this is a wonderful idea, and you'll hear someone else will say it's a terrible idea, right? And religion is like that too. You'll hear people with different ideas, and there's false prophets out there. There's people that, there were people that felt that many people were leaving observance, and if we only modified orthodoxy a little bit, that would make it easier for people to retain their loyalty to tradition. If, in other words, in order to conserve Judaism a little bit, let's just change the rules a little bit. And there were many orthodox, well-meaning people that supported it because they felt, well, if they're not Orthodox, at least they should be some other form of Judaism, or they should do something. And it made sense, but it didn't work. In other words, what it did was it made people less observant. Today we're at the end of that experiment, and they admit that it didn't work. The conservatives admit it didn't work, the reform, but they keep on saying, well, they have to retool themselves, they have to do it different. But it was like a false vision. In other words, people invested in this form of Judaism, and it didn't. It was a false vision, and it didn't bring people closer to observance. In fact, it was the opposite. It made, if a person is allowed to drive, they're not going to drive to the synagogue. They drive to the mall, and they don't go to the golf course. And that's what happened. And if they made it easier to convert, they have a problem. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal by the head of the conservative movement begging non-Jews to convert. It was in the newspaper last week. Because they're not converting. Because they made it so the conversion is a joke. So why bother? There are ideas in the marketplace that people have that are out there, and they sound convincing, or they sound like they might work. And we unfortunately suffered from that. That we had a lot of there were people that many Jews went for communism. They thought if only everybody would be socialist and communist, they'll get rid of anti-Semitism and it'll solve all the problems. And they were convinced 100 years ago it was hard to find Jews that weren't socialistic, that didn't feel that was the solution to all of mankind's problems. Unfortunately, Stalin taught us that it didn't solve mankind's problems. But there, in other words, that a person should look around and be aware that we all, I'm sure, are drawn in by ideas that might not be correct. We might be following false prophets, and so we have to search for truth. We really have to check into things that we might have thought all along and we just haven't thought too much about, or we haven't thought about it recently, or maybe it was true then, it's not true anymore. And so that part of the tragedy of the destruction was that we followed false prophets. There were false ideas, ideas that were nothingness. 15. Safkalai kapayim. Now, what do the Gentiles do when they saw our destruction? Usually people feel bad, terrible, look at their destruction. The anti-Semites, they clapped at us. They shrieked at us. Sharku, that's the word shriek, shrak. They waved their heads. I used to see that every now and then growing up. Sometimes a car would drive by and yell, "Dirty Jew," or something like that. Even occasionally here that would happen. Not a lot, thank God. Not as much as people would make you think, you're in the South. People have that where their Gentiles will wave their heads at them and make noises at them and shriek at them. But that was in some countries. Today in France, they say it's very dangerous to be a Jew. People are getting attacked in the streets if they're visible as a Jew. It's very dangerous to walk outside in the Yom Kippur.
Even if you're in the synagogue, you get
it. Synagogue, right. It's unbelievable because people really thought after the Holocaust that anti-Semitism would disappear. And it's a strong reemergence right now, but they stick out their heads. And sometimes when you have Tisha B'Av and you say, well, things aren't so bad, why do I need to mourn? But there's still anti-Semitism in the world. There's still this position of the Jewish people, the Venerosh Albas Yushalayim Hazos Seir. And people, they make the comment, they say, is this Yushalayim that was Klilas Yofi, was the most beautiful city in the world? Yerushalayim was a city of great beauty. Masos the Kolar said, all over the world, people would come to see the beauty of Yerushalayim. Today, you can see it. There's you go there, you have to look for it. But you can sometimes see the beauty. There's a certain fame that, Jews, that sometimes people get the bug if they see it, the beauty of Yerushalayim. But at one time, it was well known, it was world famous to be a beautiful city. And what do these Gentiles do? Verse 16, Patzo alai p'yem, they open their mouth, kola all your enemies. Sometimes you have enemies, but at least they're quiet, they don't say anything. But over here, they all, they open their mouth, they gnash their teeth, shokuv yoku shein. When you open your mouth and you see their teeth, that's sometimes people mumble, so they don't say it out loud, they mumble it. Here, if they give you a full mouthful, it means they're not embarrassed to open their mouth and say it. Ach zehayom shekevinu, they were happy about this, they couldn't wait. Verse 17, Asa Hashem asher zaman, this is the day that Hashem did, that he brought the destruction that he had said. Now, this was not something that was not predicted. This is what Hashem said would happen. Betzim Asher Tziva Mimei Kedem, it was known. We knew about this. Haras V'lo Chamal, and then when the time came, there was no pity. If Yismach Aleha Oyev, and the enemies were happy, Horem Kerem, they picked up their head. Verse 18. So what do we do when the destruction happens? Tzoch Libam El Hashem. We always know in a time of trouble, we cry out. So we cried out our hearts to Hashem, Chemes Basio, the walls of Zion, Horidi Kenacho Dima, and we cried. We always know that the tears is the highest form of prayer. That it says that even when the prayer gates might be closed, the tear gates are never closed. So we cried like a river. Yom V'laiva Atit Nipugaslach. And we didn't stop. In other words, sometimes a person does a little prayer, and I prayed. No, we constantly prayed. Al tidum, don't be quiet. In other words, we're believers in prayer. We think if we just pray strong enough, we just get that little bit enough, then everything will change. We just, if nothing has happened, we need to pray a little more, because you never know what will be the when it'll be there. Now we get a surprise over here in verse 19. Should I see if you catch it, or should I tell you what the kumi wrote? Get up and cry out at night. L'rosh Hashmuris, and the different times of the night. And there is the idea of crying at night. The pious people used to wake up in the middle of the night and they would cry for the destruction of the Yerushalayim and the situation with the Jewish people, and they would get up and cry at night. But the surprise is in the second word. In verse 19, where it says, get up and cry, it uses the word roni. Get up and do roni. I have a daughter whose name is Rina. Rina is a happy song. That's what the Rina is, one of Gila, Rina Ditsa Vechevel. Why do we say that when people get married? Gila, Rina. Rina is rejoicing. So why does it say, get up and do Rina? Be happy at night. So night, by the way, is the exile. And there is a belief, and the Hasidim are very strong in this, especially the Brestover philosophy, that our challenge in life is to stay happy, is to keep our cheer even at night. You know, that we face difficult things, but it comes from Hashem who loves us, and it's part of the plan. Get up and roni, get up and learn to be happy at night. Even though that's not how they translate it here. The translation here in this says, arise, cry out at night. But usually Rina is a happy cry, or at least an optimistic kind of cry. Get up and cry. The commentator, there's a, I think I saw there's a Gemara that, the Gemara says the word Rina refers to study Torah. Get up and study Torah at night. And there, we believe that Torah study makes you happy. There's a certain joy in Torah study. You know, some of us come to learning because, you know, we wish that, you know, when we teach, it's so exciting, it's so much fun. It's not always that way. I wish, you know, I'm not that kind of teacher. I wish it would be. You know, it's so, you know, that. But there, you know what it really is? There's an inner joy that you feel from learning. It can't be, it's not easily explained. I got the, when I was 14 years old, and I hated Hebrew school, and I used to try to escape from it, like all kids of that age. And I didn't think learning, well, it's because that's memorization, you're memorizing letters. And it, try memorizing letters from a different language that you don't use, nobody around you uses it, you don't understand it, and you're an American kid who doesn't understand it. It's a masculine form and a feminine form, and to pronounce it like this. And it's just very... you know, the kids, the Hebrew school system was an awful system. But what I discovered, I had an interest in Judaism, and I had an experience where somebody sat down with me and studied Mishnah, and I felt uplifted. I didn't understand it. It was the first time I experienced that, where the learning made me feel good. And I never stopped. You know, once I caught that bug, that's, I have been learning ever since, or trying to learn ever since. But there is a joy from learning. And so it could be it's saying, get up. And what do you do in times of darkness? You study. You study Torah. There's a certain inner joy that it can bring, a certain happiness that it can bring. Now, sometimes you may not feel that. Maybe you need to change the subject. Try a different book. Try a different, you know, different work, a different... The Torah is vast enough that there are different subjects on almost anything. If you like math, you can study Torah math. If you like a building, you can study Torah building. If you like poems, there's Torah poetry. If you like songs, you could find it in Torah. But that's what he's saying. Kumi roni belai, get up and feel the joy during the night times, during those times of darkness. Study with the joy of Torah.
Is this the man's name today, Ron?
That's a modern name. I'm not sure if it's. I don't know where they take it from. I didn't know if that's where they take it from or not. I thought it was from like Ronen or Ranan or. But the word it's a masculine Rina, right? Which is a term of joy or the. But it is interesting. Like I said, it's just funny in the middle of Eicha, the dirge, you know, the lamentations, the final get up and sing happy at night, and they don't. But it means that. Get up and learn to be optimistic. Learn to see hope. Learn to see the good in it. Now, this the night watch is an interesting term. Also, in the Beis Hamikdash, they had different watches. The changing of the guard. The British got that from us 2,000 years before. There's a certain they would change the guard in the Beis HaMikdash. There was a watch where different groups, so at the time of night when they would change the watch, so that's a time to get up. And then it's the next part is they made into a famous song, because sometimes when they look to make songs, they like to take important verses. And you may have heard this, Shifki Kamayim Libech, pour out your heart like water. Meaning that when you pour out water, it just like flows. There's the idea that we have, when a person faces a lot of tragedy, they close themselves up. And they emotionally their heart is closed off, and a person needs to open up and pour, let the tears come out, don't hold back, open up your heart, and that it's suggesting that we have feelings, we have maybe they're complaints, maybe it's sadness, but we have a place to direct it to, direct your feelings to Hashem. Shifki kamayim libe, pour out your heart like water. And where do you pour it out to? Nechach pnei Hashem. You direct those tears. You direct our prayer. We have a conversation with Hashem, and we need to have that conversation. You know, when a person feels a sadness or feels they direct, pour out your heart to Hashem. Throw your burden on Hashem. Relate to Hashem. And it's a hard thing. I mean, we don't see Hashem. We don't know. People experience a connection to Hashem when they can talk to Hashem, when they can pour out their hearts to Hashem. Who else are you going to pour your heart out to? You know, other than Hashem, that's a goal, really, is to be able to take. You know, when a person is having hard times, to be able to go to Hashem and just pour out your heart. Just let it flow. Don't hold back. That's the idea of pouring like water. Sialecha kapayim, and put up your hands. That's when you pray, you lift up your hands. Today we've gotten away from it. One reason is the Christians stole it. You know, they do a lot of meaning that we don't like to do things that other nations have used for foreign gods and other concepts, and so we don't often pray with our hands. But it was a legitimate way of doing things. And the other thing is we don't do things that seem strange, even though they might. It is true that when Hannah prayed in the Beis HaMikdash with all her heart, Eli thought she was drunk because it looked so strange. And the reason why it was okay was because she didn't think anybody was watching. But he was like the caretaker, and he was watching. And so, and it's okay to daven when no one's around. If you want to daven with your hands, you know, and you want to daven, like, that's perfectly appropriate. But around other people, we don't often, you know, it's just not, it can distract people. So, you know, I wouldn't say you have to tell somebody not to. But there was a time when we prayed with our hands. If you look at all but that's where the Gentiles get it from. I don't know even if they do it, but certainly the hands and but you won't see it in our shuls. It could be that part of prayer, though, is not to distract others from their prayers. If in order for me to get God's attention, I need to move my hands around and make all kinds of things, that it wouldn't be appropriate unless the person is in private. If a person is in private and they want to do the hands, you know, go right ahead, do the hands. I haven't personally gotten into it. I know there are people that are into the hands. And some of them, you could see that they really feel like you watch their hands. It looks like they're, you know, doing something. You know, they're moving things up high with their, you know, I'm reluctant to say that because there are a lot of mishugnas out there, people that are just, you know, God came to them and they do all kinds of strange things with their hands, so I don't want to, but there is a sincere way to use your hands when you pray, and that's why he says, pour out your eyes and lift up your hands in prayer, and that's the thing to do. And pray for the innocent ones. You know, there's some people that deserve what they got, but certainly there's... when tragedy comes, there are a lot of innocent people that suffer. These poor children that are dying of famine, that are on the head of the street corners. There's sometimes it talks about physical famine, and sometimes it talks about spiritual famine. Today, the young people, many of them are empty. Their lives are empty. They're spiritually famished. They're in like the internet world where it's hard to reach them. you know, it's hard to reach the youth. There are people that are dying on the street corners. Rei Hashem, Hashem should look v'habitu, and he should see. Lamia, how did this happen? Now, one of the tragedies they had, im tocha nashim pirim, if women would eat their children. So that's a very unusual thing, is that people would become cannibals. Actually, during World War II, the Russian prisoners of war were known to be cannibals. They would, they were so hungry that they would eat each other. Or, either things got so bad that this would happen. But we don't believe that. This is some people when things are really bad, people go crazy, and so part of the decree was that things got so bad that even our women, who were so merciful, they ate their children. They literally became cannibals. That you can't imagine anything worse. You know, we could not imagine such a thing. A person would rather die than eat their child, or even if they. But that's how bad it was. As bad as anything you can imagine. Other people say it doesn't mean literally eat their children. Many times, most of us we sacrifice for our children. We learned that from our parents. In other words, that they gave up so that we could have. We wouldn't dream of taking away from it. We wouldn't make our children work for us. We wouldn't want to them to give up opportunities so they could stay home and take care of their parents. But over here, what happened was is that the people needed in the times of famine, they ate their children. They took risks with their children. They had their children. Instead of them helping their children, they needed their children to help them. And Nebuch, during the Holocaust, they would send the children over the walls, because the children, an adult that would have been caught outside the walls would have been killed. They sent the children over the walls, the ghetto, to get food. And again, it was like putting your children at risk, and that was done. Now, why did this happen? Sometimes we feel that things are so bad, they're not just. So he mentions over here that there were certain things that happened that we deserved what happened. Im yarg v'migdosh, Hashem, kohen v'navi. There was a terrible tragedy at that time where there was a holy, pious person who was a Kohen and a prophet, and he was killed in the Beis HaMikdash, and some people say it was on Yom Kippur. Gets even worse. Like, you can't... people so much didn't want to be told what they were doing was wrong that they killed good people. And so, it's not only... It's, you know, there are people that will sin, and then there are other people that not only will they sin, but they don't like anybody else telling them that they sinned, or anybody else who stands for something good being around. So not only do they sin, but they destroy the righteous. And so that's what happened over here. The tradition has it that at the first Beis HaMikdash, when the Gentiles came, they found there was a certain blood on the floor of the Beis HaMikdash that was bubbling. And the place where they slaughtered this righteous person, his name was Zechariah, the blood, they'd clean it up, and then it would like reappear, like the stones, like the blood would come off the stones. Sometimes people have that like water or coloring that comes out of a stone. It's hard to explain exactly why it happens, or discoloration, they had what looked like out of the stone would come like a reddish hue. And Georgia clay, maybe they over there in the floor. When the Gentiles came in the Beis HaMikdash, they said, "Why? You know, the floor was a beautiful stoned floor. So why this one stone did this red hue come out of the floor?" So the Jews told the truth. They said, "Well, we no." First, they said, "I think they must have slaughtered a cow and forgot to clean it up." So what happened was the Gentiles slaughtered a cow and showed them that it didn't look like that. And he said, "I'm going to string you alive if you don't tell me the truth." And so the Jew told them, "You know what happened is we had a leader that told us we were doing wrong and we'd be punished, and our Beis HaMikdash would be destroyed if we didn't change our ways. And instead of changing our ways, we killed that righteous person." So the Gentile, what they did was they came to that spot and they slaughtered thousands of Jews. They slaughtered children. They slaughtered priests. And he said, "I'm going to quiet the blood down." And still the red blood was there. And after the Gentiles slaughtered tens of thousands, according to the Medrash, tens of thousands, or many, many people, he turned and he said to God, he said, "You want me to kill all of them?" And then the red disappeared. That was the, but that was, Josephus brings that down, but the Medrash brings it too, about Zechariah, the prophet and the priest Zechariah, who was killed on that spot in the Beit HaMikdash because of the, but the idea is that as long as we didn't want to confront our evil, we wanted to just kill the messenger instead of trying to improve, that's what happens. Shaful Oretz Chutzos, the people are down on the ground, Narv, Izakin, young, old, Usai, Bukharai, our youth, our hope for the future, Nafu Bukhara, falling by the sword, Harachti Biyom Apecha, they fell on the day of your anger. Look at all the millions of beautiful people that were killed. Tavachta, and they weren't just killed, they were slaughtered. That's like what's done with, they were slaughtered, Velochamati, took no pity. 22. Tikr Kayom Moed. It was called like a, it was like they're having a party, the Gentiles, and it wasn't that they were sad to do this, that they felt bad that they had to do this. They were all excited to come in and participate in the slaughter. And there, nobody escaped the wrath. There were no survivors. There's nobody who escaped without facing the tragedy. People who we had loved and we had measured, people who were treasures, had been destroyed. Chapter 3, let's begin. Ania Gever. It's interesting how the tone changes. The chapters were written different. This one is referring to Jeremiah himself, writes this. I'm the man. He had a certain perspective, and that was, he was given the job. Many times prophets had good news. He was the bearer of bad news. That's an awful job, you know. You ever went in the military, the one that has to go to the parents and tell them that their son died? And that's an awful job like that. Like, who would want to do that? Jeremiah had that kind of job, and he said, I'm the man. Somehow he was given this job. He said, he's the one who has to see the punishment. He has to see the Jewish people facing Hashem's anger. Osi nohag v'yela choshe v'lo or. He was looking for the light of day. He was looking for the rainbow at the end of the storm. And Hashem like led him in darkness. Things didn't get better; they got worse. How could it be? And he was doing everything right. Achbi Yashuv, against me, Hashem returned. Yafak Yadu Kol Yom. He was constantly asking him to rebuke the people and sending him on his missions to try to get the Jewish people to change. Be the Bissori, I'm worn out. His flesh is worn out and his skin, his bones are broken. Bonalai, he seeched him. Beyikav Rosh, he's like filled with bitterness. He really had a hard job. He was told the destruction would happen and he tried to prevent it and he was unable to, and he was the witness. 6. B'mechashkim hoshivani, and Hashem like put him in darkness, like he's like walled in. He has a person is depressed. They feel darkness, like they feel kamei olam. It's like a person feels like he's dead. He's like things are blocked off. 7. God, it was like a fence for low ATI. There was nowhere to go. A person feels blocked at every avenue. In other words, he was trying anything he could to salvage, to save, to prevent this from happening. Hikvid nechashti, and instead everything was heavy, everything was hard. He was like weighed down in chains, like every movement he made was with great difficulty, like he was chained down. Verse 8, Gam kia, now sometimes people, I prayed, I really tried, I prayed, and prayer always helps, but guess what? Gam kia, even when I cried out, my prayers were like blocked. They weren't heard. There was no gutter darkie, and I would try a new path. I would try something, and there'd be a wall. I'd be hitting my head against a brick wall. You don't really think about putting yourself in Yirmiyahu's shoes, like trying to see. He was a leader who saw the truth, and he tried everything he could think of to get out of it. And it's a wall, it's darkness, it's this, it's that. Verse 10, and he's got bears waiting for him. He was thrown into prison, he was beaten up, he was thrown into quicksand. Whatever he did, he felt There's a bear and a lion. Aryeh Lib and Mr. Ryan. There, people are waiting to pounce on him. Verse 11. Darki Sor, his ways, whatever path he would go, was like full of obstacles. Sometimes a person knows what needs to be done, and he doesn't go easy. Sometimes people say the opposite. If you see something doesn't go easy, that means it's a good thing, because Hashem makes good things go with difficulty so that they become special. In other words, the logic is not what we'd expect. In other words, sometimes a person wants to do something very good, and he finds it difficult. There's like obstacles in his way. Hashem is making this hard for me. And you shouldn't think, well, I'm not supposed to do this because it's not going easy. It's the opposite. Good things don't go easy. Sometimes they take work, and to do the right thing, Hashem deliberately made it because it's so unique and so special that you're doing the right things. But Hashem was like putting obstacles in his way that he did not expect. Okay, we'll stop here at verse 11.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it, so that he can continue that site.